Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Governor Landry yesterday. Some of what he said was accurate. A lot of it was not. For example, the taxpayers aren't on the hook for the $53 million buyout. That came from, according to different sources, maybe Shaq, maybe Todd Graves. Cokie Riley joins us now, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. How you doing, Cokie?
Doing pretty well. How's it going?
I'm all right. And also, Brian Kelly and Jimbo Fisher are not represented by the same person. Kelly's represented by Trace Armstrong. Fisher's represented by Jimmy Sexton. So, again, the governor, with all due respect, talking about being a lawyer and getting facts straight, he is a lawyer, so he should have gotten those facts straight. But all that aside, how much of a mess is the LSU head coaching situation in now with the governor dabbling in it, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a clown show at the moment.
Okay, and I'll go with that. Clown show.
Yeah. And it's a, and it is simply kind of ruining the leverage that LSU has in this coaching search, given all the advantages they have to, you know, taking a job like this. There's the prestige, the fact that there are so many good recruits within the state while not having to compete with another major school in the state for. The LSU job, just on paper, like,
Cokie?
Penn State and
you, you broke up a little bit. The LSU job on paper was the last thing we heard.
Okay, okay. The LSU job is the best job on paper, and that includes Florida and Penn State. And I think that, you know, this sort of circus and the lack of structure at the top, with there being no president, with the governor being involved in the coaching search, kind of reinforces.
Again, you're breaking up. I don't know if somebody's trying to call you.
Walk into that.
Is somebody trying to call you, Cokie?
No.
Okay, maybe we just got a bad connection. Let me see if we can take an early break on traffic and rectify that, because I want to hear what you have to say, okay? Cokie Riley, our guest, LSU beat writer for The Advocate, the governor mistaken a couple of things he had to say there. Also mistaken a couple of things he had to say about the city and the bond issue. We'll talk to Clancy Dubose about that later on, but now we're talking football with Cokie Riley. We'll pick it up. We come back 7:19. Hopefully Joe Cardosi is ready with a look at traffic a little bit early here on WWL. It's 7:24, hopefully back with Cokie Riley, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. Cokie, take me through the anatomy of a coaching hire at this level of college football, please, with the agents and everything else. How does it work traditionally?
Traditionally, it's the athletic director who heads the search, who then goes to the board of directors and the donors to approve said search. And we have gotten into a day, I mean, I guess the governor's right about this, and that the contracts for these coaches are absolutely obscene. But a lot of that has to just do with the competition within the sport and how much money is on the line. And they want to get the person who can build out the program, make things right, because this isn't, well, it's kind of changing, but like, this isn't professional sports where, you know, the coach just coaches the players. The coach also builds out the program, hires the staff, builds out the roster himself while also, you know, coaching the players. So the guy's the head man for everything, and everything kind of falls on him. So you just want to get that right. And they didn't get it right with Brian Kelly. That's totally correct. But Scott Woodward in particular, his track record for hires is still pretty darn good. And I mean, he hired Jay Johnson. They've won two national titles in 3 years now. He hired Kim Mulkey. They won the first LSU women's basketball and their first ever national title under him. When he was the AD at Washington, he hired Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson had a lot of success at Washington, got Washington to the college football playoff. He hired Jimbo Fisher from Texas A&M. That's true. But the buyout, $77 million, was not on him. That was an extension that was granted to Fisher after Woodward had left A&M for LSU at that point. So there would have been a pretty decent buyout if they had fired him in 2023 without the extension, but it would not have been anywhere close to $77 million if it weren't for the extension that he didn't give him. So the idea that it's $154 million in buyout that's blamed on Woodward is actually incorrect. That's just not factual. So I think Scott Woodward's a good AD. I think the only real mistake he's made, the only major mistake at least, I guess you could argue that it was a mistake hiring Fisher in the first place, but I think the only major mistake he's made as an athletic director was this Kelly hiring. And so I honestly don't think necessarily deserves to, you know, totally not have the chance of hiring this. You could argue it, you know, given the amount of money that they put into this Kelly thing now, but I don't think it's a slam dunk by any means.
I'm more concerned about the process moving forward because the governor neutered Scott Woodward yesterday, right? So what happens now when it comes to who's negotiating with whom for a new head coach?
Exactly. Yeah, like who's negotiating the contract? I think whoever is going to run this search, and if it's the board of governor, if it's the board of supervisors, and they come together and they put together this sort of team that quote unquote experts to sort of try to find who the next head coach is going to be, they're going to quickly realize that they're going to have to shell out money. Like say Lane Kiffin's the guy, right? And they really want Lane Kiffin. They're going to have to compete with Florida and Penn State for Lane Kiffin, and that's going to raise the price for Lane Kiffin regardless, right? Or, heck, even if they want Tulane's John Sumrall, right? Say Auburn fires their coach in the next week or two. Now they're going to be competing with Auburn for him, for example. The idea that you can get a coach without having to spend maybe not Brian Kelly money, but at least somewhere close in the range of Brian Kelly money, maybe a little bit less than that. The idea that you're going to spend less than $7 million a year on a coach, that's just not going to happen.
Well, I think
it's going to be over seven. It's going to be at least seven, probably over and closer to Kelly than not.
And to be clear, there are no guarantees here. Lane Kiffin, everybody falls in love with Lane Kiffin. Everybody falls in love with John Sumrall, falls in love with whomever, just like in a draft or when it comes to recruiting a player. There's no guarantee that that person's going to deliver a national championship. There are so many variables involved, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what's at least just as important, if not more important, is not just the money you have to spend on the coach, but the money you have to spend on the roster, right? LSU, Kelly said, spent $18 million on this roster this season. That's about three times more than they did last year, which is much more competitive, but that's still not as much as what Texas and Texas A&M and Oregon and some of these major schools spend, other major schools spend on their rosters. So I think it's not just the money you have to put into the coach, which is important and I think is something that they should do, even if the governor insists that they won't do. It's also the money that you put into the roster, and that's just such a critical importance to it, and you have to have good assistants, so that's an extra bit of cash. Blake Baker, for example, the defensive coordinator, is the highest paid assistant in college football right now, which Blake Baker has been bad at his job. With Blake Baker, I wouldn't say he's the best assistant coach in college football. So they have to pay up here, regardless, if they want, you know, a coach of good stature to come here, especially amid the mess that they've created themselves with the situation with the governor.
So is Scott Woodward on his way out? Was that the first salvo? And then before you know it, Scott Woodward's gone. We're looking for an AD as well as a head coach.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen here, right? Like if the governor says that out loud, and I think if some people are pretty upset with Scott Woodward, given the amount of money that they've had to spend on Brian Kelly, which I I mean, it is understandable. Mm-hmm. It's the second largest buyout in college football history, right? And I because I can understand the argument why you wouldn't want Scott Woodward to hire the next coach. Like, I get it. But to say that Scott Woodward definitely shouldn't, or it's like a slam dunk that he shouldn't, I just totally disagree with it, given the amount of success he's had with these other coaches and the strategy he has, which is let's pry the best possible, the biggest names from the biggest schools with the best resumes, and we're going to overpay for these guys, but so what? Like, they're really, really good at their jobs. They're mm-hmm. proven commodities, and that didn't work out with Brian Kelly. And because of that, that's why when you take that big of a risk, I don't even know if it's a risk, but if you make that big of a bet, I should say, on Brian Kelly, it better pay off, and it didn't for Scott Woodward, and that is the big problem for him right now.
Thank you, Koki. Appreciate it. We'll talk to Cynthia Lee Sheng, president of Jefferson Parish. We come back right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 7:46, 14 till 8. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Jefferson Parish President Cynthia Lee Sheng. Good morning, Madam President. How are you?
Good morning. We're doing very wonderful this morning.
All right. The first question, and it's everybody wants to know, is who are you going to hire as the next LSU coach?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
You mean you're staying out of it? You mean you're staying out of it?
I had a work event in D.C. and everybody was asking me about it.
You're staying out of it? Are you really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's probably best. I'm going to stay out of it too. Let's talk about, I want to get to this real quick because you did bring it up at the State of the Parish yesterday. And I know I saw some things about bond ratings and New Orleans having issues and Jefferson Parish having some issues, but it's a night and day difference.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thing. Talk about the difference, if you will, Cynthia Lee, first, and then we'll move on.
Yeah. Actually, you know, Tommy, you've covered in Jefferson Parish, we've had a really large number of emergencies, right, from mm-hmm. when we first came in office, from COVID and then Ida and tornadoes and drought. And then we had saltwater intrusion. And this past beginning of the year, we had snow. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, the good thing is that we get support from the federal government. We get a lot of grant money. So we had an unprecedented amount of grant money that we took in Jefferson Parish. Normally, we would say we would take in $33 million a year prior to my coming in office of grant money. And in the past 5 years, we've taken in $586 million worth of grant money. So it really was a processing issue. We got behind, you know, grants, you have to close it out. You have to constantly report. Some of the grants came down like emergency rental assistance with no guidance whatsoever during COVID. So it took a lot of manpower from us. And we just couldn't keep up with auditing our financial data. That's simply what it is. We do have a lot of money. We, you know, this year was the first $1 billion budget we've ever had in the history of Jefferson Parish. We're proposing a new budget to the council again. It's an increase. So it's not about our ability to pay. We're paying on time. We're paying our debt on time as well. We have a lot of money. We just can't process the audited financial statements in time. So we got behind on that. Also, if you don't know, there's a financial, I was in that world. I was a CPA. There's a shortage mm-hmm. of CPAs. There's a shortage of financial professionals. People are leaving to get bigger amounts of money, work at home options. So we have sort of a shortage of those professionals, and that's nationwide going on. So that's what the issue is. So our bond rating was not downgraded. It was just withdrawn for lack of the most current information. We filed our 2023 audits in September. In the spring, we hope to file our 2024 and hope to be back on track a few months after that with our 2025 audit. So we're getting there. We hired Deloitte to help us. But it's a processing issue, not the same situation.
You are a forensic accountant by training, right?
I was. Yeah, I did. I did do that.
So let me ask you this. Yeah. When it comes to educate me here, teach me if you can. When it comes to if Jefferson Parish wanted to issue bonds for whatever reason, does it have to go before the State Bond Commission or not? Is that the way the state law is written?
I think for state bonds, you have to go if it's a state project, but we go up to New York and we do. So I'm not sure of the details on that. Maybe we have to get approval at the state level. We probably do, but we have to go to New York and go before those folks and get, like, if when we get this withdrawn, hopefully I'll be making a trip to New York to do that. So that's critical, but we certainly keep up with it. I've spoke to the legislative auditor for the state. So we might have to go to the bond commission for approval, but I think it's done, you know, on the, you know, national market.
So what were some of the things that you mentioned at the State of the Parish yesterday luncheon?
Well, what's really exciting in Jefferson Parish is our real momentum with sports tourism. And I know you covered it a lot. That really started with one of the principles of Recreation Reimagined that we were trying to do a couple of years ago, which was very, very controversial. You know, recreation, when I came in office, was wonderful. I grew up in the system. I'm passionate about it. But it was sort of this, you know, we had 27 playgrounds with a cookie-cutter approach. We're going to do volleyball, then football, then cheerleading, and then baseball and track throughout the year. And many of our gyms were empty because we're an aging parish. We couldn't field teams. And we wanted to, you know, reimagine it. And one of the principles of that was let's go really big in one sport, in one area, with the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, not try to do everything at every playground, just really big with baseball in this one area. Let's say with pickleball, instead of doing one or two pickleball courts throughout the parish, let's go with 9 courts at Miley Playground and do pickleball. And I remember mentioning that at those times, and it was not well received. But since then, we've built the Miley Pickleball Complex, which was not because I was a pickleball player. I was not a pickleball player then. But we built our recreation team saw pickleball as a really exponential growth. They wanted Jefferson Parish to have it. They thought of 9 courts at Miley. And what we've done there is really magical. I'll say it. If you go there any given night, you're going to see people from Slidell, from Houma, from the North Shore, from Baton Rouge. Friends of mine come in every weekend, stay, get a hotel, go to restaurants, found a church here just to play at that facility. That facility has gotten so well known in other states. Visitors know to come to that facility. That Southern Pickleball, which is based in Georgia, that runs a lot of the amateur tournaments throughout the South, pick that site to host their tournament next year, one of their first tournaments next year at Family Grow Weekend. And that's going to bring in folks all along the Gulf Coast. I mean, we want to market that along the Gulf Coast. So what happens? They buy hotel rooms with us. They shop at our restaurants. They eat at our restaurants. They shop at our shopping malls. So the sports tourism piece is really huge for us. We're about to open next year the John O'Leary Jr. Sports Complex.
That is beautiful. If y'all have not been there, you need to take a ride over there and see it.
8 multi-purpose fields, beautiful turf, LED lighting. It's not just baseball. We're going to be able to host softball, football, soccer, lacrosse, rugby. And what that is going to do is put people on airplanes from all around the country with destination Jefferson Parish. And again, a real boost to our economy in ways that we've never seen before. So we're really, you know, we have, and what I love about this is that when I'm marketing things, I was able to try to pitch cornhole. And they said, we have an opportunity to land cornhole. And I said, I want to try. And we were able to get the National Cornhole Tournament here a couple years ago. And I was able to visit the people. And what did they do? They did a crawfish boil. They went to Bourbon Street. And they loved the experience. They didn't just go to a city somewhere in the middle of nowhere to play cornhole. They loved the whole little slice of the way of life that we have down here. And I realized, wow. And they told me this was our favorite tournament. The P1 powerboat races brought in 66 teams into Lake Pontchartrain, right, from around the world. They already committed to do the next one in April of next year. So when they come here for the tournaments, they get a feel of our lifestyle. They love it. And what I love about it is it doesn't take from New Orleans. It really adds to the tourism pie with New Orleans because we sell it as a New Orleans tournament. Mm-hmm. I will sell it as, you know, for the pickleball, I said, look, we're close to the airport. You can have Saxis Avenue luxury and, you know, a 12-mile, 20-minute drive down the street, your family's going to be feeding alligators in the swamp, right? There's no other city that can offer such different experiences in such a short distance. And so it's easy to sell, and, you know, we have the infrastructure, and then we sell the New Orleans brand to these folks. And you know, we're going to be able to put regional and national tournaments to all these sports in the greater New Orleans area. And our council members have really helped us. Our recreation budget is limited, and our council members have really bought in, found us funds with their own discretionary funds. They've brought in events themselves. We have a big, easy open disc golf tournament in Park Day for Me, which is a beautiful park for us. We envision Bright Playground to be our tennis hub. So we have some capital programs to put a lot of tennis courts at Bright. So we really, I think, are just getting started on this sports tourism piece. But look, families, they spend $30 billion to $40 billion a year on kids' sports, and we're going to grab a bigger piece of that pie.
You know, the only thing I'll say is everybody needs to think back to when you reimagine this and what they thought at first, and now look at how it turns out. So you can't always resist anything that's different, and kudos to you for having the guts to stand up and do it.
Yes, thank you, Tommy. Thank you for always remembering that. That was tough times.
Well, it was. No, but I admire you for that. I really do, because that's what leaders do. Thank you, Cynthia Lee Sheng. I appreciate your time. Have a good day. All right.
Okay.
Jefferson Parish President Cynthia Lee Sheng. We'll take a break. Come back. Next hour, we'll talk to Clancy Dubose and Jeff Nowak about the state of the city and the bond issue and all that stuff. And also Jeff Nowak about the Saints. Right now, time for traffic on WWL.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.